Just like with the equipment that you use on film productions, you really have to know what to do. Like in this studio, when someone comes up, let's say you call me like, Neil, I have a problem. And you tell me my problem is XYZ. I've been here in this studio enough where when I hear what you're saying, I know where to start troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that kind of like situational awareness in an environment where you could kill yourself or a lot of other people, you'll find out pretty quick if you enjoy it or don't. But it gives you the ability to just focus. In December, I was the guest on an episode of the Heuristics podcast hosted by Kobi Ben-Melech. Heuristics is about how humans interact with technology. For that full, unedited episode of the Heuristics podcast, click on the link in the description. The next few episodes of The Business of Entertainment will be a mini-series of clips from the recording I did with Kobi, but will feature additional commentary both at the beginning and end of each of these episodes. In this segment, we're going to go over lighting and management logistics for tentpole productions, and a little bit of set safety. I'll also give some advice about how I started out in the entertainment business. And I'm going to finish up with about having a career in the entertainment business is for the most part a thankless job. So let me know in the comments, you know, if you're working in the entertainment business, let me know. What is your proudest moment on set or when you were part of a production? Enjoy.
Back to you for a second with Captain America. I mean, so like, is that a huge undertaking to do the lighting for such a massive project, or like, are you just working in a fact, not a factory, but like all sort of a warehouse type of thing, or you're actually out on the highway when they're blocking the 6 kilometers?
I was out on the highway when they were blocking the 6 kilometers.
No way.
A lot of the time though, I was spent at base camp, where I was helping build car rigs with the riggers.
Okay.
Where,
Wait, what's a car rig?
So it's a cam. It's basically metal pipes attached to a car in a way that it won't fall off the car. So let's say you want to do a stunt with a car,
mm-hmm.
and you want the camera on or in the car, you hire someone to rig it up to the camera to the car.
Mm.
And have it perform the way that it's intended to perform.
How do you test that?
It's not that you would test it before you do a stunt, because sometimes stunts are one and done.
Mm.
It's more of being able to work with people who have the expertise that when I was always working with other people that have done this for over 2 decades.
Yeah.
So I was never alone, like, Neil, figure this out. I was with one thing, but that was a much smaller aspect.
Yeah.
But like a car rig, like when a car is going to flip upside down and we need to replace the passenger seat with a metal cage that a camera is going to fit into so it can record the driver, you're under supervision to make sure that it's being done this way, that way, how it's attached, some people who are in charge of the rigging department, they have in their toolkit custom bolts and connectors that, like, where you would unbolt the car seat, they have special connectors that bolt into the car frame where the car seat was,
yeah.
that then connects to the car the camera rig.
Okay.
So the metal cage that I'm trying to simplify this. So like the camera's inside of this metal cage with the lens poking out. Or the lens usually actually kind of in it just enough so that it won't hurt the driver and the lens still sees everything without the cage.
Yeah.
And like, let's say the car is going to flip upside down. You don't, you have to have it secure enough so that the camera's not going anywhere. The camera rig, the cage that it's in, isn't going anywhere, because you start flipping cars at 80, 90 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you have things in there that weigh like 50, 60 pounds that start flying around, like people die.
Yeah, I know that.
So it was depending on where base camp was. Base camp is basically where all the trailers are, just parked.
Yeah,
and I would be mostly at base camp working with them. The lighting that I did with them was me on site laying down cable at one of the locations when I was picked up by first unit after the second. I was originally on second unit rigging, and when they wrapped, I was recommended to and brought onto first unit electrical, rigging electric. So I helped set cables and prep lights. And
man, it sounds like a stressful job if those are the stakes.
Yeah, but I like it. It to me, it's enjoyable, and I'll tell you why. I like being able to focus on, it's very easy to have like a million things going on with you in a day. And when you're working on something that where somebody else's life depends on it, let's say you're packing parachutes for a military unit that's for new guys in a military unit that's just training, you need to pay really close attention to what you're doing because those guys don't know how to double check their work. Whereas when you're working with a really competent crew, you'll have people who are preparing dangerous things for dangerous things. And then the people who do the dangerous things know how to go back and check it. Like when a pilot goes out and check, like you'll see a pilot wearing a yellow, green or reflective vest, walking around an airplane, looking at it under this way and under that way, like going and physically checking to see, like, is this plane okay to, like, do I see anything weird about this before they just get into the cockpit and, like, we're taking off, like, holding a cigar. I'm just kidding.
So, I mean, I don't know anything about pilots, but pilots actually know, the like, every inch of the plane and to be able to check.
Pilots should know what their aircraft is. They should know a lot about their, before you even, when you go to flight school. I've never been to flight school. I know people who have, and I have someone in my family who is a pilot. When you go to flight school, you do basically everything is groundwork. Like you literally just going to a classroom and studying about flight. And then you have to study about the airplane that you're going to be using. And you have to know it. Just like with the equipment that you use on film productions, you really have to know what to do. Like in this studio, when someone comes up, let's say you call me like, Neil, I have a problem, and you tell me my problem is XYZ, I've been here in this studio enough where when I hear what you're saying, I know where to start troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that kind of like situational awareness in an environment where you could kill yourself or a lot of other people, you'll find out pretty quick if you enjoy it or don't. But it gives you the ability to just focus.
Wait, what kind of people I'm trying to think of how to phrase this question, but this profession selects for what kind of people?
Depends on what you want to do in this profession. Like,
who shows up in the movie set, for example?
Really, anybody could show up in an entertainment set. Like, I specifically wanted to work in feature films in art department, and that didn't happen. I basically just showed up, and I said, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing, but this is what I like. How can I help?
Yeah.
And honestly, those are the best people to work with. The people that are just like, I'm here, I'm new, and the ones that admit that they don't know what they know, it's really beneficial. It really is, because you know, like the person who has experience working in that environment knows where to put someone like that so that they can A, learn, and B, hopefully have fun. But and C, A, be safe.
Yeah.
B, learn, and C, hopefully have fun.
Yeah. But again, with those kinds of stakes, and I'm assuming it's also a thankless job. Right?
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it really is a thankless job. There are some celebrities, though, here in Israel that I would say definitely thank their crew. I've heard stories of other like major A-listers from like Hollywood doing XYZ for their crew, but I've never been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the producers of Captain were absolutely fantastic and in terms of thanking their crew. At least from my perspective and what group I worked in.
What does that look like?
After they rented a taco truck and you could just go and get free tacos. On set. It was actually one of the thing that made me think like, man, I always want to be relevant to content creation. was doing something. I got finished doing something on one of the takes where I was like right there next to a bus that had pyrotechnics on it. And there's a lot of action and stuff and like fake guns being shot on set. And right after that, like my boss was like, "Hey, Neil, we were wrapping here while we do transfer. Take a break. We got a taco truck." So like after that, I went and got free two free burritos, custom. Pretty cool. But the producers will take care of their, like, good producers will take care of their crew.
Yeah.
Good producers will find ways to like, "Hey, we can do this today to make everyone's morale a lot better." And make everything fun. It is a thankless job from the general public, pretty much most people aren't thinking. I'm the type of guy that sits there and watches the credits. Okay.
Because you're in it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm in it. So like I like looking at different people's names. There's actually a new section in credits that is really cool, production babies. And they only list the first name. So any person working on a production that puts production babies in there, so if you have
what's a production baby?
Any person that works on a production,
yeah,
who has a child, whether you were the father, the mother, or like you had a child during that production,
and this
is still your job and you got to go and do it while your spouse is at home with the baby.
Yeah.
That baby's first name gets a credit in the movie. Okay. Under production babies.
So I'm going to be an asshole for a second. So they took you away from your newborn child and all you get was like, that's I'm just thinking of the t-shirt. Like all I got was my child's first name on the fucking credits.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're on a union job in America or Europe, you're getting benefits in terms of like you have insurance through the production.
Yeah.
If you're in the union, you have benefits through the union. You're making a paycheck. You're being able to provide for your family. I mean, I understand that the humor aspect of it, but at the same time,
I was just being a dick. Yeah.
No, I agree with you from an outside perspective that. What it looks like.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of people that miss birthdays, graduations.
Wow.
Because they got to make money to support their family.
Wow.
And it can be hard sometimes. The person that's going to do this wants to do this. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was this guy, his name's Bernie. He got out of the California film industry and moved to Turkey. And I really want to go meet this dude in person. And I've never met him in person, but we've chatted a lot on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this industry is like jail. Everybody knows how they got there. Nobody knows when they're going to get out. Because it's when you have the best day, like your average day on a production.
Yeah.
Is way better than sitting in a cubicle. You ever seen the movie Office Space?
Of course.
Sitting in a cubicle?
Right.
I would rather take a bad day on a production site than having, in terms of as long as it's not a safety bad day.
Yeah, of course.
Just being able to be in an environment where you can walk around, get up, move, be active. You feel that you are contributing to the process of what's going on in front of you.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah,
you are actively contributing with your hands, your feet, your eyes to be a part of what's going on and what people will see.
Right.
You can kind of take owner. It gives somebody the ability to take ownership and responsibility of what they're there to do.
Right.
And a good producer will hire people that know how to do their job so that the producer doesn't have to micromanage and tell them.
Yeah,
and that way a producer can keep a more higher level eye on things, and while making sure that morale is good.
Yeah,
I think morale is one of the best. Like if you're not having a good time on set and morale is low, I think that translates to the audience. I feel like the audience can see that and takes subconsciously.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you really do raise a good point where, you know. Most modern workers who sit in an office all day, like they don't see the value of their work reach the reach of their work, right? Or whatever value that they're creating, right?
Yeah.
And this, every company that produces anything, really, right? It's broken up into all these micro tasks. And if you're one of those micro tasks, let's say there's 50 of them, right? Until, like, let's say, for example, to produce a car, right? There's so many different people that go from idea to a car being built, shipped, sold. You know, like, you're so far away from the client getting the car and saying, oh, wow, great, now I have a new car and my day is so, so wonderful. No, really. Like, yeah, it's a problem, right? I mean, this is what Marx was talking about, right? With the whole alienation of the modern worker. Like, we just don't bake the bread and sell it to the customer anymore and say, yay, my day's labor, and look, I made this person's life better for this one brief moment in time, you know?
I got a crazy story exactly about that.
Tell me.
All right. Last year in Georgia at a wedding, on the way back from where the
Georgia, the state or country? Or
country.
Country.
So we were in on the countryside. We were going back to Tbilisi after the whole wedding and everything was over, in a big bus, everyone together. And we stopped at one place to, you know, let everybody stretch, pee, get some food real quick at a local place, at this one, like, bread-making place that was there.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who got married, she was buying bread from this old lady making bread there and asked the old lady, did you used to have a bread shop in Russia here and on this street?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. And the elder lady said, yeah. And the woman who got married, the bride, she's like, I used to buy bread from you on the way to school in the morning at, like, when I was in, I forgot how young she was, like,
whoa,
9 years old, like 30 years apart. And these two meet in Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but, like, that's really, like, really cool.
It
right?
Probably made her day to be like, wow, someone who I sold, like, bread to 30 years ago is still able to get bread for me in a whole nother country.
Yeah. And that's such an amazing story to really, it sunk so deep into their, I don't know, memory bank or subconscious that they associated bread with the woman, you know? It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
But when you, just to come back to the question I had about who are the kinds of people that show up to this job. So I can imagine, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's like a very working class kind of environment. Like, you know, guys who don't really have such a huge ego, they, you know, they can make fun of one another. Like one of those kind of, you know.
Oh, no, you get some egotistical.
Okay.
You can get some really egotistical people. I won't say what this was or who it was with or what I was doing. I will just, I'll say I was, like, this is when I still lived in Arizona.
Okay.
Before I came to Israel.
Yeah.
I was helping break down a stage for a huge event that happened in Arizona.
Okay.
And this guy that we were working with, so there was a boss that was telling all the workers what to do for our group. And this guy said, one of the workers said to the boss, yeah, I'm okay. I know this. I've done this 10,000 times already.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that multiple times. Like, I was keenly aware. I don't remember his name. I don't remember what he looks like. I just remember he's done that tens of thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's a different way to approach. Like, yeah, no problem. Like, why not just show it instead of telling people all about it before you go and do it?
Mm-hmm.
You get people with egos, you get people without egos. You get people who don't know what to do, some people who don't want to be there. I didn't want to do lighting. I didn't want to do lighting at all. I only wanted the opportunity to have some experience working in production.
Mm-hmm.
You get, I mean, depending on what the department is you're working in, because it's not even just with lighting or there's rigging. There's also the art department, which is, like I was studying before, you have the sound department, you have the managerial department, like the, there's like a director's department dish almost on really massive productions. You'll have the director, then you have the first assistant director. So the director's job is split into two different jobs. You have the director, you've got Michael Bay going, action, blow it up. Yeah. Okay. But how do we get to that point? You have the other half of his brain, the first director, who's basically got the whole schedule of what's supposed to be shot, what order, how everything is supposed to go through the day. And they keep the director on pace and on time. If you are in a huge production like a Michael Bay film or Game of Thrones, you've seen Game of Thrones?
Definitely.
Thousands, like hundreds of people that would be on set in one day. Hundreds of actors. And all those hundreds of actors needed costumes and the makeup, and then some of them needed mics, and the whole environment needed lighting, and that lighting needed structural support. So the rigging department.
Yeah.
Okay. So the on productions that big, you have the first assistant director, then you have the second assistant director that is the assistant to the first assistant director.
Jesus, it's fucking complicated, man.
And in in the Americas, that person can actually have an assistant as well, called the second.
Wow.
It's called the second AD.
Oh my God.
Although in Europe, it's called the third AD, third assistant director. So, and depending on how many managerial tasks are needed, you talked about microtasking. The third AD or the second will have a lot of micro tasks that get put together that are less tasks for the second AD to put together, that then hands off stuff to the first AD, who's like right there next to the director all day to make sure that they're like what the director wants and is going to get can still happen.
Oh my God.
So like it's, you get all different types of people within the entertainment industry.
Who?
And on top of those are just people who are on set. Then you have people in post production who people in labs who used to develop film.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who are now, instead of developing film, working with color correction or what they call DITs, digital intermediary technicians that help with like on set coloring, and you can actually preview what the director wants stuff to look like based on conversations that were had in pre-production with the cinematographer, and then that would get handed off to a post-production house that has multiple post-production editors if you need visual effects. Special effects are things that happen on site in camera with people around them, like physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Visual effects happen in the virtual space. So you would have maybe some, let's say you need to do some visual effects works, just maybe some light stuff. Have you seen the show, what was it? It was the woman who was trapped in the, it was a comedy produced by Tina Fey, and the woman was trapped in a basement and finally let go, and she's like trying to explore. She wasn't trapped in a basement. She was stuck in a cult in a basement and finally like exited out into the world. I forget the name of it. But anyways, one of the scenes was shot in late autumn, and the trees were barren, and they were trying to make it look like it was summer. So they had visual effects artists go and make these trees in the background look like it was more summerish.
They were photoshopping trees.
Basically. So depending on who you are and what you want to do, and you could come with an ego, you can come with a whole different set of skills. Let's say you want to be an accountant. But you want to be an accountant in something that's cool. No, go work in production accounting. Like you could, there any type of job I feel that you could do in the real world. It you could do that in content creation.
Wow.
Film, theater, film, theater, television, any of that.
Yeah.
But like, what about my in terms of like just focusing on lighting? It's really mostly, I would say, more like blue collared,
mm-hmm.
in that specific aspect.
Yeah.
Like riggers and lighting and sound are more like blue collared.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I went off on a massive tangent.
No, it was awesome.
If I do that again, you want me to stop? Just tell me stop.
No. That was extremely complicated to explain.
Once upon a time, a second AD for the second of a third AD, and never mind. The amount of job titles and careers in entertainment is endless. Working on large-scale productions specifically can at times be, you know, overwhelming, even for seasoned professionals. The management structure, the nomenclature, and even job responsibilities differ from production to production and from location to location. I remember when I was new to the studios and someone asked me to go get them an apple. And I thought to myself, hey, dude, I'm really busy. Go get yourself an apple. And what they really meant was to ask me was to get them a grip head for a C stand. In summary, the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. In the next episode, I'll go over working with light in various mediums, airy volumetric sound stages, pixel pitch, which is a spacing between pixels, and how commercials have really pushed volumetric staging to the forefront of filming. Let me know down below in the comments what are some of the goofier names for production terms where you work. Again, thanks for joining me on this mini-series about lighting, camera, and production life. I hope that these episodes have had an impact on you and how you work in the business. Please don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe. See you in the next episode.